Now let us go over to Mr. Bentley Tripp.
A minute. Have you ever seen that piece of poetry about her, Bernard?
I've heard your mother recite it, but I don't know it. It's lovely.
No, I got that here somewhere. Yeah.
I have actually got a copy of that from...
Oh, well, then you've got her tonnage and all that there. All right.
Oh yes.
Yeah, so is she related to you?
Gwen, yes. Yeah, we are distantly related.
Yeah. But you weren't actually...
Well, the only thing that I can tell you about the Mohegan was that my father was a fisherman. He was living at Perthala at that time. Mm-hmm. And about 7 o'clock in the evening on October the 14th, 1898, they were very surprised to see this big ship come in from the eastward, from the direction of the Eddystone Light, into Falmouth Bay. Mm. Lit up, just like they would look at it then, like a town.
Yeah.
And they couldn't quite understand why such a big ship had hauled into the Falmouth Bay. Mm. She didn't stop. When she came into the Falmouth Bay, she took a course straight down for the Manacles. Mm. Well, it wasn't very long before there was a hue and cry. I don't quite know. I don't think she put up any distress signals, but anyhow, there was a hue and cry very quickly, she might have done, that this ship was in trouble. She hit the Vase Rock and ripped her bottom out. She continued her course after she ripped her bottom out, and she sank between the Vase and the Voices. Nearer the Voices than the Vase, as you know. She went down. Now, the depth of water there is about, where she's gone down, is about, what do you make it, Bernard, 12, 14 fathom?
Yeah.
Somewhere about, I should say.
Yes.
You weren't actually alive when the ship sank.
I wasn't born then. I wasn't born until 1901.
Yeah. But wasn't your father on the lifeboat that went out for these survivors?
Now, I'll tell you now. Now, the ship went down. And it was so quick and sudden that she was flooded, of course, from end to end, and all her electric lights and everything all went out. Mm. See? And, of course, the lifeboat was launched, the Perthelstock lifeboat then was launched, and old James Hill was first coxswain then of the lifeboat. My father wasn't coxswain not then. He was one of the crew. He was one of the crew at that time. Old James Hill was first coxswain, and I think Jim Clip up Manacle View, I think James Henry Clip was second coxswain at that time. Mm-hmm. But my father was a young man, and he was a very smart man. But he was stroke oar in the lifeboat. That was, always put two of the best men in a pulling in lifeboat, one each side to be the stroke. Because mm-hmm. there was no motors in those days, you see.
No, there was no sails either.
Now, this is my father's story, that when they launched, the sea, it was quite a big heavy sea running. It had gone down from a gale. Mm. The sea was moderating, but there was a very heavy swell. And when they got halfway out to the wreck, the first thing they came across was one of her lifeboats, upside down, somewhere round about Mangerick. Mm. Well, they took one living from the keel of the lifeboat, and there was 24 dead in her.
When it was capsized.
They turned her over. The lifeboat turned her over. And there was 24 dead and one living. They took the living one aboard the lifeboat and left the dead go. Hmm. No use in picking them up because they was going on there to find the wreck.
Yeah.
But all they had to go by was the screams of the people because it was so dark. Hmm. Now, my mother was a young woman then. I suppose at that time she was born in 77, Bernard.
Yeah.
77 to 98.
'20.
Yes. Hmm. And she lived in Rosneith then, in the house where you're living, Bernard. Her granny lived there then, Mrs. Peters. And your granny, Mrs. Rogers, came over to where you're living now, to where my mother was living.
Your mother just told me that now.
Yes, today. And she said, Mrs. Peters, she said, from my back door, she said, I can hear some very pitiful crying. She said, I'm sure there's a wreck on the Manacles. And she said, I would like for you to let Janie, that's my mother that is now, who's 90 next year.
Yeah.
I would like for you to let her accompany me to Perthelstock to see what's wrong. Mm. Well, my mother and his granny walked to Perthelstock. When they got down, the lifeboat was going to sea. Mm. The lifeboat hadn't gone, but was going to sea. Yeah. And old James Hill hadn't had his full regular crew. He was calling for volunteers. Mm. And of course, as I told you, I should have told you this before I started about the lifeboat going out and picking up the the one survivor first. Mm-hmm. Well, then they proceeded on to the Mohegan and found her. And you saw there on the bottom of that picture how many they brought in. First time, it's there.
Yeah.
I don't know that I can tell you offhand for a moment now, but it's on that picture there. They came in and landed that lot. And of course there was a lot of distress on the beach because families were separated. Mothers and fathers had landed and the children were missing because they were all very rich people aboard this liner. Mm. They were rich Americans going from London to New York. And good many of them were millionaires.
They were. Yeah.
Many of them were. Yeah. Very, very rich people.
Because it was about the finest boat of its time, wasn't it? The Mohegan.
Yes.
You know, finest class of boat.
She was, yes. And, well, I can't tell you much more than that. I know that the last two or three that they took off the funnel, including the chief engineer and two stowaways, clinging to the funnel.
Uh-huh.
They throw the heaving line, and they pulled them from the funnel to the lifeboat and saved them. They were the last they pulled off. But I heard my father say that there was one young woman, she was about 28 or 9, that was, there was one of her ship's lifeboats, and this young woman was in this boat, and when they went to get her aboard the lifeboat, of course women in those days hadn't had bobbed hair, they had long hair.
Yes.
And nearly all these people were dressed for evening dinner.
Mm.
And of course they were, many of them were retiring to go to bed.
Mm.
And of course women in those days had long hair down to their waists, sometimes you see, flying around.
Their crowning glory, in fact.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, this young woman had got her hair entangled with some ropes from a lifeboat. And old James Hill said to one of the lifeboat crew, a man called Frank Tripp, who was a farmer at Tregaron, he was like Bernard there.
Mm.
He was a great fine chap, and he was a very smart man on land or sea. You could put him where you like.
Mm.
He was a good man in a boat, very fond of fishing, like Bernard, but he was a good man on land and one of the smartest men that was in the lifeboat crew. He was called Frank Tripp.
Mm.
Mrs. Jemima Tripp up St. Kieran. Jemima. Now, see, he would be her nephew, I suppose, Frank Tripp would be. Mrs. Fargo up here, Dorothy, it was her father, I believe Frank was. Now, I aren't certain. It was either her Frank or her father or her uncle. Well, anyhow, old James Hill said to Frank Tripp, he said, take the axe and cut her hair off.
Mm.
To free her. To save her, see?
Yeah.
And as he took the axe to cut her hair off, with a roll into the lifeboat, he missed his aim and cut off another woman's leg in the lifeboat and she bled to death.
Oh, God.
Cut her leg clean off.
Otherwise she would have been alive.
Otherwise she'd have been alive.
She was saved, that's what I'm
saying. Yes, he saved her.
Yeah.
Now, 2 days or so after the wreck went down and the sea moderated, my father and my uncle were fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
They left for Thallow one early morning to go to all their gear. There was no motors in those days, it was sail.
Yeah.
And they always left about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Did they?
Yeah, always, early tide, you see.
Yeah.
When they got away down below the manacles, deep off the Voices there, they had gear well out off the Raglan there, my uncle said to my father, he said, George, he said, I can hear somebody crying for help.
Mm.
He said, you can, Charlie? He said, yes. He said, I can hear somebody crying for help. The boat was under sail. Wasn't a great lot of wind. And as the boat was going along, the noise of the waves from her bow was drowning the sound a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Well, after a bit, my uncle said, there it is again. My father said, I can't hear anything, Charlie. Oh, he said, I can now. Yes, he said, I can hear something. Well, they made towards it. When they got there, there was a young woman clinging to a piece of wood about that long. She had none under her armpits.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd been in the water going up and down with the tide 2 days and two nights.
Good heavens.
My Uncle Charlie...
Still alive.
My Uncle Charlie said, throw her up, George.
Wouldn't do that with her, just a light easterly. You wouldn't move, would
no.
you?
Just go. All she had on was her night attire.
That's
all she had on. My Uncle Charlie threw her a rope. She caught hold of the rope. He said to her, now you got hold of the rope, dear, you can leave that piece of wood. She wouldn't leave that piece of wood go. She clung to it. She would not they couldn't get her to leave it go. She had such faith in that piece of wood that it had kept her up all that time.
Mm.
They took her aboard the crabbing boat and landed her in Prestock.
Mm.
Now, this is history that I'm telling you.
Oh, it certainly
is. Which I've had handed on to me by my father.
Yes.
Well, the next day now, the next morning now, all the beaches are from Lawlands to the Manacles, Gudrevi, the Dean, Pacrees, Boat Road, you know what I'm talking about, all these names of these places, was nothing but dead. Women and children, mostly. Drowned. And I expect from Rasnathan, his grandfather, William Rogers, and he, I expect, farmers had their carts carrying them up to St. Kevin to the church. They were all laid out in St. Kevin Church. Laid out there until they were buried. Some of the richest Americans were embalmed.
Mm-hmm.
A firm of embalmers came down from London who did do that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them were embalmed and sent back to America.
Would you say then, Bentley, in your experience, it's the worst shipwreck that's happened around
on
this
coast? On the Manacles, I should say,
yes,
that I can remember, although during the Peninsular War, now, I used to be very good at history. Are you good at history, Burr? When did Sir John Moore die at Corunna? The battle...
Was it 1815?
Well, no, I can't tell you the date. My history is not good enough for that. The Dispatch and the Dryad and the Primrose were three brigs of war returning from the Peninsular War when off the Manacles they were caught in a gale, driven ashore in on the Manacle Reef, and perished, horses, non-commissioned officers and men the lot. And as you remember, many of them are buried in St. Kevin Churchyard. You see the grave up there. There used to be a plaque inside the church up St. Kevin, given by the company of the 10th Hussars, I believe it was, to commemorate this dreadful loss of life with these soldiers and men returning from the Peninsular War.
Bentley, to get back to the Mohegan, did your father or anybody else that you knew at the time make any comment about this error of navigation that seemed to have been the cause of the trouble?
No. The only thing I can tell you about the... all I heard him tell me was this, that after they landed from the first trip to the Mohegan on Bathurstock Beach, incidentally, before I go any farther, old Dr. Leverton Spry, which Bernard have heard of many a time, Dr. Leverton's father was the doctor here then, and he was down there, of course, and there was two very rich gentlemen landed from her, and he called to my mother, being a young woman, and asked her to escort these two gentlemen up to Miss Hill's cottage. No, up where David used to live, up that winding path up there. Well, she took hold of them, one each side of her, and when she got up to the old coal cellar that was there then, she took fear and run and left them. She was afraid. I heard her talk about that.
Of course it was dark, wasn't it?
Yes, but she left your granny down the cove, and she took these two old gentlemen, and when she got up there, she took fear and she was so frightened at what happened, and seeing these dreadful sights down on the beach, people crying, children missed, and all that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
It was a dreadful time, mind. And, anyhow, now when the lifeboat was going the second time, a lot of the lifeboat crew who went the first time were that scared and frightened, they wouldn't go second time.
The lifeboat crew were even scared, were they?
Some of them were. They were very frightened. And very sick. Some of them are very, very sick.
Yeah, they had grounds to be sort
well,
of scared,
it was a test that they couldn't stand for the second time.
Well, Arthur Cox was one of the first crew, wasn't he?
He was, Arthur.
Well, then, I mean, he wasn't a seaman. He got every right to be sick, I should think, wouldn't he?
Well, Arthur didn't go. Old Matt Eram was another. And my father and Frank Tripp were about the only two of the genuine lifeboat crew that went the second time with James Hill and Cliff. They had a call for other volunteers to go to make the second trip. Yes. Now, I heard my father say that they think they brought the captain of her ashore dressed as a fireman in overalls, in brown overalls. They had an idea because when the lifeboat touched the beach, this man hurried out over the side of the lifeboat. He went up across the beach as if he was fired out of a gun. And they never seen him anymore.
Mm.
And a man that night, during the early morning, next morning, was seen taking a boat and rowing across Helford River. Whether it was him They said he had knowledge of this vicinity. I don't know, but his name was Griffiths.
Yeah.
It was said that he was one of the biggest shareholders in the Atlantic Steamship Company, in this ship.
Mm.
This was a rumour. Whether it was authentic, I can't tell you.
No, it was talk at the time.
It was a rumour that he had good knowledge of the Manacle Reef, because it was so absurd that a ship leaving London for New York should be so far out of her course.
Mm.
She passed the Eddystone at 6 o'clock in the evening. Mm. And to come into Falmouth Bay when a ship should be on a deeper course.
She was 3 miles off the Eddystone, wasn't she?
Yes, or about that. You see, they couldn't quite understand why, because, as a piece of poetry says, the night was clear and starlit.
Mm.
The sea rolled as before, the ship was gliding grandly with captain to the fore.
Mm.
They thought ere many hours they would the channel leave and reach the sweeping ocean where no danger would conceive.
Yeah.
Now, she had no right with a clear and starlit night. It wasn't like if it was fog and bad visibility.
Oh.
The night was clear and starlit.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
Ship had no business to be in there.
Mm.
Now then, if he had good knowledge of the Manacles, and the course he took, as Bernard would know, he might have had an idea that he would have rammed her down at the back of the Minstrel.
Mm.
What we call the Cones.
Yeah.
That's the reef of rocks inside the Voices, which I know like the back of my hand.
Yeah.
I walked about it there, Lawwater. Mm. Jumped overboard and picked up pots when we've lost them.
Mm.
I mean, I know the Manacles, he know that.
Oh,
yeah. Like the back of my hand.
Yeah. David comes to him for information.
Now, if he could have put her there, if he wanted to destroy the ship, if he hadn't hit the Vase Rock, he might have been steering a little bit more west for Coverack, the Lowlands. He could have put her there.
Yeah.
He could have thrown away the ship, but he wouldn't have thrown away any lives.
No.
Seemed a funny thing with the new ship, though, Bentley.
Yes. Well, it was her second voyage. But when she hit the Vase and ripped her bottom out, he couldn't get her there. That is, if it was his intention.
Yeah.
But it mustn't be a libel on anybody's part that.
No. Well, the
opinion at the time.
Yes, yeah. It was the opinion that he threw the ship away to get the full insurance on. To get the insurance on.
Yeah.
Now, whether it's true, I don't know.
Well, really, the whole affair is a mystery right to this day, isn't it?
It is.
The real answer is not known, is it?
It is really a mystery.
And
there was all this terrific loss of life. And as you know, there's a big communal grave on the north east end of St. Kevin Church, or the north door of the church. You can go out and see it there, as you probably have seen it.
Yes, yes.
And there's 40 coffins in that, 40 people laid to rest in that grave from her.
Have you ever met any of the survivors it at all?
I haven't, never, no.
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 Mm.
But, of course, I was a bit too young, really.
Yeah.
I wasn't born then. I wasn't born until 1901.
Well, there's not many people left that remember the actual sinking, of course.
No,
your mother does, but I believe she's rather poorly today.
Oh, her memory is very faded now.
Yeah.
She'll be 90 next June.
Yes.
You see.
I'd like Alan to avert your mother's story of the Spiridon Vaglia, whatever it is.
Well, Spiridon, I can tell you about that.
She was
the Spiridon Vagelina was a steamer. I don't know whether she was laden or light. But she went down between the two Voices rocks.
Mm.
And it was a dark, rainy, windy night. No light was called. In the farmhouse down at Rosnaithin, where my mother lived, where Bernard knew very well. Who's living in there now, Bernard? My mother sold it.
Which farmhouse is that?
Where mother lived. It was the farmhouse belonging to the little tenement that Charlie had.
Yeah, Morgan's, the Thatch one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that was the farmhouse belonging to the tenement that my father should have bought when John of Truthans offered that to my father, house and the lot, £800.
Yeah.
The vineyard, the barn field, the hospital field, iron lower.
Yeah.
Did Bentley know the names of them?
Oh, yes.
Well, he missed his Anne there, boy.
Yeah. Yes,
£800, the lot.
Yeah. You'd have been fixed up. Anyway, she was in there.
He wouldn't have gone wrong, would have, Bernard?
No.
Well, anyhow.
To make 8,000 now.
800. Old son offered my brother £800. Goes, brother, just look after his bullocks in here for him. Yeah. See, even Trethan, see.
Yeah.
Brother always had bullocks in here, feeding bullocks for John.
Yeah.
And kept fowls down the yard and all that, see. Anyhow. His grandfather, William Rogers, went down to the Gadrevi field the next morning to see his cattle. Oh, I must go in before my story now. In this farmhouse, there lived an old man who lived there and was farming that little tenement at the time, called Mr. Eddy. He was a feathered old Peter Eddy. Mm. Peter, that died up St. Kevin. Yeah. Peter's father, old Mr. Eddy, nice old man. Yeah. He was bedridden. He was sick. And my mother used to go down and keep company with Mrs. Eddy, because the old man had to have a lot of heat and a lot of boiling water. Kettles were kept on the stove at night. In the kitchen there was a great Cornish range, a big one. I believe he's in there now, where Lily and Arlie was at that
park. He's gone now.
He's gone.
I know, I remember the one.
Anyhow. About 2 o'clock in the morning, there used to be a little window looking down Chenail Road, up over the little small room that Arlie and Lily had for a little sitting room like. Yeah. But there used to be a bedroom window up there, and they used to keep a little night light up on the landing.
Still there, the window.
Mm-hmm. And all these sailors in Spirit Dawn Magdalena, the Greeks, they landed in Gadrevi Beach in their own boats. They came up Gadrevi, up Chenail Road, up through Chenail Farm, I think they come through Chenail. When they was coming up Chenail Road towards the farmhouse I'm telling you about, they saw this little night light, see? They come around and up the garden path where the gate is now, and they bundled in the kitchen with the water running out of them. My mother and Mrs. Eddy was down in the kitchen. They screamed and run because they're frightened out of their lives. These Greeks, between 20 or 30 of them. Some of them come in and sat up on the slab to dry their clothes, water running out of them. Frightened out of their wits, 2:30 in the morning. When your grandfather went down, William Rogers, went down Gadrevi next morning to see his cattle, he saw a bundle of something down on the beach, on Gadrevi Beach, and when he went down to him, there was the captain. It was afterwards found out he was the captain, great big chap, brawly great man he was. He had his brains beaten out. They reckoned that they played rough with him when they landed, beat his brains out. And William Rogers, your grandfather, picked him up on Gadrevi Beach. Now that's all I can tell you about the Spirit Dawn Magdalena. Yeah.
Well, that's all that's known, I think, isn't it? Your mother told me once she was about 15 at the time.
Bentley's narrative is continued on the other side of this tape.